Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Happy Sequester Day, everybody. You know, you don't usually think of the Pentagon in terms of how nutty a place it is, but as the sequestration budget is expected to take effect later today, military reporter Fred Kaplan says most of the media have not yet conveyed what he calls the full nuttiness of what's about to blow. Let's find out what kind of nuttiness that is. Fred Kaplan writes the War Stories column for Slate and is author of the new book, The Insurgents, David Petraeus and the Plot to Change the American Way of War. Hi, Fred. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, thanks.
To set the scene, the Pentagon takes about half the hit in the sequestration budget, about $45 billion to be cut in the next 7 months. And you write that at first you thought that's a lot of money but hardly catastrophic. What was the rational scenario that you wrongly hoped might unfold?
Well, you know, $45 billion, that's about 9% of their budget. You know, I do this every year. People who look at the defense budget do this all the time. You go through the budget, you say, oh, well, this really could be delayed, that could be cut, this is really a stupid program, whatever. You could probably come up with $45 billion. But that's not what's going on here. What's going on here is, okay, no, what you have to do, with some important exceptions, which we can discuss later, but in general, what you have to do is take every single line item and cut each one of those by 9%. So in other words, Brian, it would be like somebody comes to you and says, Brian, you've got to cut your household spending by 9%. And, you know, your first reaction would be, well, okay, I guess I don't need premium cable this month, and I could do without some desserts, and I can cut out this. And they say, no, you have to keep all of those things. You just have to spend 9% less money on them.
On each one. So
each
in the
one.
Case of the military, you mentioned things like procurement, research and development, weapons testing, civilian personnel. Each of those, a 9% cut line item by line item.
Well, actually, civilian personnel, it's more because there's an item called personnel. Military personnel are exempt from this for obvious reasons. But that means that civilian personnel have to take, I mean, you know, we've been hearing the news stories that 800,000 civilian personnel are going to have to go on furloughs. They've translated that to mean that for the last 22 weeks of this year, they're just going to have to take off one day each without pay, one day per week.
Now, President Obama made a political anti-sequester appearance this week at the big shipyard in Newport News, Virginia, and you use shipbuilding as your first example in the story of the sequester's nuttiness. First, let's listen to the president.
But the main reason I'm here is to call attention to the important work that you're doing on behalf of the nation's defense and to let the American people know that this work, along with hundreds of thousands of jobs, are currently in jeopardy because of politics in Washington. In a few days, Congress might allow a series of immediate, painful, arbitrary budget cuts to take place, known in Washington as the sequester.
And I'll add by way of context that I lived for a few years in the Newport News area, and other than the military itself, the Norfolk Naval Base and things like that around there, I think the Newport News Naval Shipyard is the biggest employer. It is a big, big deal economically in that area, which is why he went there to, you know, try to enlist a lot of Virginians to his side of the argument.
A lot of Virginia civilians work in the Pentagon, too.
Right. So what's going to happen at the shipyard? That caused you to include it in your article?
Yeah, well, for example, shipbuilding as a whole, in other words, you take the entire Navy, it's about $13 billion, 13.6, and 9% of that is 1.2. So when I first looked at this, I said, well, okay, this, what they'll do, they'll, you know, they'll say, well, we'll just delay the new aircraft carrier. That'll pretty much take care of $1.2 billion. But no, that's not it. Each single ship has to be cut. So, for example, There's $3 billion allocated for two new destroyer ships. Somehow, they have to cut $270 million out of that, but keep the program going. Or kind of the most absurd example I could find was that there's a ship called the Joint High-Speed Vessel. It costs $180 million. They can't cancel that or delay that ship. They've just got to figure out some way to cut it by $16 million. Now, I don't know what that means. Do they delay the bolts for a while? Do they leave off the paint job?
Yeah,
everything
but the rudder.
Months? Yeah.
So, listeners, I wonder if any of you are employed in the defense contracting industry or work for the military itself and want to chime in on this topic, which is this one slice of the sequestration budget, which almost certainly will take effect later today, and that is its effects on the military and, you know, the outer rungs of the military world, like defense contractors. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. For Fred Kaplan, who writes the War Stories column for Slate and is author of The Insurgents, David Petraeus and the Plot to Change the American Way of War. 212-433-WNYC. Since this is half of the cutting that's going to be done under the sequestration budget, if you have any comment or question about this part of it, 212-433-9692. Now, Fred, you point out that there is also a certain degree of flexibility in this law, leading you to conclude that actual military readiness might not be as threatened as some of the armed forces chiefs have been vocally warning about. So what is some of that flexibility?
Well, there is a category called operations and maintenance. This is things like fuel, training, base repair, you know, operations and maintenance. It's the things that make the military go. There is flexibility there. Basically, there's Army O&M, Operations Maintenance, Navy O&M, Air Force O&M, and so forth. They each have to be cut by 9%, like everything else, but it doesn't have to be line item by line item. So they can figure out, okay, listen, we really do need to have this training exercise next week, but we can cancel the air show. We can let some pipes get a little bit rustier at this base before we go repair them. So there is some flexibility on that sort of thing. But that's really the only place where there is that kind of flexibility.
But nevertheless, you put a crying wolf tag, or at least a possibly crying wolf tag, on the Navy's decision not to deploy an aircraft carrier to the Persian Gulf.
Right. I mean, let's keep in mind one thing. Usually we have two aircraft carriers in the Persian Gulf, so it's not like we're leaving the place empty. There's still one aircraft carrier there, and one aircraft carrier has enough firepower to destroy about 1,000 targets within range. So it's not like we're denuding our defenses in the Persian Gulf. But I do think we don't know the precise numbers, and I don't even know that the people managing the budget, I've talked with some of them, they're not exactly sure what's going to happen or what they have to do. But it seems to me, since most of what a Navy aircraft carrier steaming on deployment is involved in is operations and maintenance funding, that the Navy could find something else to cut in order to let that continue. But again, I'm being a little speculative. I mean, it's more expensive to run the fuel and all of that on an aircraft carrier than it is to fix some rusty pipes on a base. So, I mean, maybe they've already deferred all the things that can be deferred, and that's what's left.
212-433-WNYC. Roger in Cortland, Manor. You're on the air. Roger, thanks for calling.
Good morning. I have a daughter in the Corps of Engineers, and I don't know if people realize, but about 85% of the engineers are considered civilians, so they're not eligible for the GI Bill or anything like that, even though they're in the same location as everyone else. My daughter was in Afghanistan for 16 months, you know, building airports and runways and dodging incoming. She's now with NATO, and they're responsible for maintaining building bases and, of course, with the drawdown, taking apart the infrastructure. And they got notices Tuesday that they're going to have a one-day-a-week furlough.
That's interesting. Because
for those in where she is now in Luxembourg, you did have a 3-day weekend. But for those, she's going to be heading back to Afghanistan as the drawdown continues. They need folks to take those bases apart and ship things out. In Afghanistan, you work 7 days a week. So you're just not going to get paid for one of them.
Well, I have been told there is another exemption, and that is civilians working alongside military people in places like Afghanistan. Now, I don't know what alongside means. I don't know if that means, literally out in the field as part of a provisional reconstruction team or something, or whether it means someone like your daughter. It might very well mean someone like your daughter, any civilian who is deployed in a war zone. So if she is sent back to Afghanistan, she might be exempt from that furlough.
But only when she's in Afghanistan.
Yeah, right, not in Luxembourg.
The work that they're doing elsewhere in Europe and around
you're right.
The world
it still has to, it still has to be done, you're right. But, another absurdity, the people who have to renegotiate all these contracts to get these 9% savings on each item, they tend to be civilians. So it's like, Brian, it's like the guy who you hire to reduce your household expenses. He says, oh, by the way, I know you have to meet with a landlord tomorrow, but that's my day off. So the people who are supposed to do this, you're getting less labor out of them as well.
Roger, thank you for your call. I hope everything works out with your daughter. And Trevor in Pelham, you're on WNYC. Hello, Trevor.
How do you do? All right, so I just wanted to talk about one quick thing about how the government can save money on some of these military contracts.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a contractor myself, and in the past we had a contract with the military where in the contract it stated that we must accept Visa or MasterCard as for payment during the contract.
From the government?
From the government, that's correct.
And why does that cost the government money?
Because Visa and MasterCard get 3-4% of the gross of the payments, and it says specifically in the contract that we're not allowed to raise our rates or our prices to cover the cost of the credit card fees.
Right.
But if anybody in reality thinks that doesn't happen, they're sorely mistaken.
But the cost goes up. Brian, you and I can pay our income taxes with a credit card. They just charge you, 3% more. So I don't know if that would solve the problem here, because as the caller says, that the military would still have to pay the 3% monthly interest fee, and where are they going to get that?
But wait, he's saying if they don't pay with a credit card, then they'll save that 3%. Is that wrong?
Oh, well, but they don't generally pay with a credit card, do they?
Trevor, how much does this happen?
They have a lot of contracts where that happens. They claim it makes it easier for their contract officers to just, approve invoices and things like that. So I don't know how many millions of dollars
in contracts. You've given me something interesting to look into here.
Trevor, thank you very much. And actually, I didn't know that thing about the IRS. Did you say, Fred, if you pay your own taxes, this assumes you don't get a tax refund on April 15th,
right,
but you have to pay something to the government, and you do it with a credit card, then you actually get a 3% nick in addition to your tax bill?
Well, yeah, somebody has to pay the, if you go to a restaurant and use a MasterCard, the restaurant has to pay a 3% fee to MasterCard, so would the IRS if you pay. I looked into this once.
But the restaurant doesn't charge you more for it.
Well, it gets passed along somewhere.
I mean, it gets passed along to all the customers in the prices on the menu.
All right, but this is direct. Yeah, exactly. That's the same thing.
But so with the IRS,
IRS to pay your Visa fee,
No, but
everybody would do
but
that.
I'm just trying to clarify.
Yeah.
The individual has to pay the 3% more?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Didn't know that. 212-433-WNYC. Tom and Wayne, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tom.
How you doing? I heard you asking before about how they defer things from when they're building battleships and they're building they're building military equipment. They're going, how do you cut $3.5 million from, say, a joint attack vehicle for the U.S. Navy?
Right.
And they don't actually cut the money. What happens is, it's already worked into the cost of whatever they're whatever company is building. Like, I used to work for Grumman, I worked for L'Oreal, I worked for IBM. And what they do is they put those costs, they actually calculate that in. And what happens is when the Congress says, oh, you have to cut money on this, you have to cut money on that, well, you can't sell somebody half a helicopter, you can't sell them half a battleship. So what happens is they say, okay, you don't have to pay us the whole thing up front. We already worked this into the cost. What will happen is you'll pay us for most of it now. And then next year when you get your military budget, you'll pay us the rest of it later. And the government goes, okay. And they say, oh, well, we cut, you know, $3.5 million from this building this battleship. Well, no, they actually didn't. What they right. actually did was they juggled the numbers around so that it looks like they paid less for it.
So no, then do they go back to Congress, the Pentagon, and kind of like the debt limit, you know, debate and say, well, we've already incurred this debt, but we have to pay it. So you have to increase our budget by that much.
Well, they don't even a lot of times have to do that because some of the stuff that they work on is such what they call top secret military contracts that all they say is we're working on this for the Air Force and it's a new type of stealth bomber. And Congress goes, oh, okay. What they don't tell them is that they've been working on it for 8.5 years and this is just another incurred cost of it.
Tom,
Congress just goes, okay.
Okay. But hey, that's stealth. True. That sounds cool and secret.
It's true, but the problem is, I mean, they've already done this. They're already doing this, and now they have to renegotiate it again. But, there are hundreds, even thousands of individual line items, and it's practical to do this for certain things, but for other things, you know, like this high-speed vessel where it's $180 million and you've got to defer 10% of the cost, it cuts into things pretty heavily. Plus, one thing I say in the article is that, you know, we're asking for contractor bilking down the road. They could, you know, next year when the crisis is solved, they can say, well, you know, we've incurred a 15% cost overrun on this item because of the inefficiencies that, stemming from this crazy sequestration thing you did last year.
So cutting the budget could actually cost more in certain ways. And Tom, thank you for your call. And I think we've heard from our callers some individual ways based on their own experience that the government could save money on military contracting, but that's not what they're allowed to do under the sequester,
right.
Which is exactly your point. They
right.
have to cut in other specific ways, right?
That's right. I mean,
Or maybe we're hearing from these contractors some ways that they can use the sequester to be forced into making more efficient adjustments.
That might happen occasionally. I wouldn't count on it. But if you want to force efficiencies, I mean, look, when Robert Gates was Secretary of Defense, he did a lot of this kind of thing, but not line by line. He would say, okay, we have to cut by a certain amount, and then you go hunting
mm-hmm.
for efficiencies that you could do. And it, in fact, allowed him to increase the budget
right.
on certain items that had been getting shortfalls.
So one political question before you go. Life in the military-industrial complex is about to get a little crazy, as you write in your article, but you call the Republicans in Congress even crazier for letting this take effect. But, you know, the Republicans offered a bill in the Senate yesterday to give the president discretion to make the cuts in more rational ways. But the Democrats wanted none of it. I think they don't actually want responsibility for making cuts this big. They want to be able to dismiss those cuts as crazy while trying to pressure Republicans into what they see as a more balanced tax and spending plan. Yes?
Yes. When you get to this point in the bargaining, it's all bargaining. And in fact, I read someplace yesterday that both sides are saying we're each going to have, we're going to have more leverage after this goes into effect. But if both sides think that, it could get even crazier. But, keep in mind the origins of this. This was something that everybody agreed to do if you couldn't reach a budget agreement, because everybody knew it was absolutely insane, and therefore we would be desperate to reach a budget agreement in order to avoid this absurdity.
Right, and that's certainly part of the news here, that it was supposed to be the Republicans, the party of defense hawks, who
yeah.
would find the military cuts so unconscionable that they would be insanely dangerous.
I think that's maybe the major miscalculation here, that the Republican Party, in that sense, and in many other senses too, but is not the Republican Party that we've known for the last several decades.
And at the same time, as the Times reported yesterday, some liberals would actually like to see the Pentagon have to deal with cuts this big, which they wouldn't get in the normal horse trading. So some of them are happy to wait and see what shakes out, just like some conservatives are on the domestic cut.
One thing that's interesting, whatever happens with the sequestration, let's say if it's solved, the Pentagon is going to have to make more cuts. There is going to be more cutting in the Defense Department. Hagel said this the other day. And it may be that after the sequestration, the military and the industrial people will be relieved to have to cut things on a rational basis.
And
maybe they'll welcome the more permanent cuts more than they otherwise would have.
Interesting point, and maybe to almost the same dollar figure. All right, on this first day of the rest of your sequestered life, Fred Kaplan, who writes the War Stories column for Slate and is author of the new book, The Insurgents, David Petraeus and the Plot to Change the American Way of War. Fred, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, I'll play some excerpts from a forum I moderated last night for New York City mayoral hopefuls, which included the candidates sparring on a paid sick leave law, how high a minimum wage, and each other's campaign donors, and included John Liu challenging prosecutors to indict him or get off his back. Stay with us.